Welcome to Association Nation. From digital content to social strategy, print power to video value, engagement to conversion, we cover the content marketing topics that matter most for your members. On today's episode, we're talking about future-proofing your organization by reaching and employing younger members and prospects. In the last month, how many times has the M word come up in your meetings? No, I'm not talking about marketing. I'm talking about millennials. If you're tired of hearing that word, I get it. Everywhere you turn, there's information about what this group needs, both as content consumers and as employees. Both are definitely important to associations. Your demographics change as time moves on, and smart associations know how to grow their ranks by reaching and employing younger prospects. But in the rush to think young and capitalize on trends, don't forget an important fact. Millennials are individuals too. While some are snapping selfies or sharing listicles, others are happy to sink their teeth into a long-form story or binge-watch a series of videos. And guess what? Pretty soon you'll be hearing just as much about Gen Z as you do about millennials. The better you are at marrying big-picture trends with personalized preferences, the better you'll be at reaching association audiences, regardless of their age. Even though I'm guilty of being a millennial myself, you don't have to take my word for it. Today I'm joined by Matt Davenport, Associate Editor of Chemical and Engineering News for the American Chemical Society, Christina Ortegel, a Marketing Specialist for the American Academy of Pediatrics, and Meg White, a Managing Editor for Realtor Magazine from National Association of Realtors. Aside from being smart marketers in the association world, they have something else in common. They all won Association Media and Publishing's 2017 Emerging Leader Awards. Welcome, everybody. You know, as far as associations go, I think organizations as a whole really have this unique challenge where they really need to future-proof themselves by attracting young members and also by attracting even young talent like yourselves. So how are you in your workplace helping to address that challenge?
This is Christina. We realize that the residents and medical students are the future of our organization. So really putting programs in place to make them feel like once they're out of medical school and residency that they're going to want to become an active member in this organization in the future. So that was a big initiative for the last few years to really, make it a place for them to really feel comfortable, things like that, doing special events for them at our conferences and courses, giving them discounted rates, discounted member benefits that they would have as a member as well to kind of give them a taste of what it would be to be a full-fledged member in the future.
Sure. And Matt and Meg, you know, as far as demographic shifts go, what challenges are you facing with your organizations? And are you kind of face challenges where different sets of members want different things?
Yeah, this is Meg. I think that, some of the ways that we can appeal to younger generations are really honestly things that are important to older generations as well. Being more real with our language and avoiding jargon. But I think really the key is with generation, X and Y, is personalization. So associations need to be thinking about how their content is helping members or telling members stories. You know, if we're not making their jobs easier or if we're not amplifying their voices, then we're not really doing our jobs. So if we do these things that are important to younger members, we're still going to reach the older ones.
Great. Matt, do you have anything to add there?
I wish I had said something earlier because those were both really, really good answers. I think the things that resonated with me were that, I guess for us and across the board, right, it's not necessarily that the different generations are expecting different things of us. They really want, I think, regardless of who we're writing for, they want good storytelling. They want content that's relevant to them. It's just a matter of how we use the tools at our disposal to engage with the different groups within the readership. And from my side, moving into a more multimedia space, I think that's been helpful to, reach out to, I guess, younger. I think the demographics there, it's fair to say they skew younger than our print readership. And so by learning how to more effectively tell stories in a video format, you're going to connect better with that generation that's already there. I think we're seeing similar things, too, with the way people are using social media, not just to say, hey, look at our content on our website, but actually use, you know, Instagram or Snapchat stories to tell stories on those platforms and connect with members there. I think one of the mistakes that you can make trying to connect with younger generations is you just come off as pandering. But I think if you, you know, we, over the course of our history, you know, we have these practices for journalism that we know resonates with our readers. And the trick is not, you know, changing that. It's figuring out how do we use these new tools that, you know, readers are already using, and how do we use those to best tell the stories that they want to see and read and hear.
And that's a great transition, Matt, because I think the next question that I really wanted to talk about is, what are some of the biggest mistakes associations are making when it comes to marketing to a millennial audience? As a millennial, I can tell you it's very obvious when people are trying to market to you and they're not doing it in a what feels like an organic way.
Yeah, this is Christina. I do feel like, just like you said, millennials, I feel like we don't buy into some of the traditional forms of marketing, especially when something is very salesy and in your face. You know, we're not going to respond to that. I think that we respond better to things that we know are either like tied to a cause or like really mean something and can kind of make a connection with, versus something that's just like, hey, here's a 20% off flash sale.
And I think we're pretty good at sniffing that stuff out. But also I would say that one of the bigger mistakes that associations can make with specifically millennials, but I think this happens with every generation, is assuming that we're all the same. You know, the larger the demographic is, the more diverse it is, right? Just that's math. So with so many millennials, the temptation to think that we're all the same is definitely there. And, you know, with the fact that we're creating so much of this big data that we can say, oh, millennials love this. And, you know, an example that I have is within our association, we're constantly putting stuff out like, well, millennials love micro apartments. And I'm like, no thanks. So, you know, it's that stuff where we need to think of these groups as individuals. And I think millennials are one of those groups that really like to think of themselves as very individualistic and different. So it's a challenge for sure.
Sure. And I think just to circle back to really talk about personalization, I think there's just such a high expectation for personalization now. And, you know, from a communication standpoint, you know, knowing that your audience is very different and knowing that you may have significant data on your audience and the content that they're consuming allows you to serve up personalized content that you know, or at least you know they have a tendency to be interested in. And from a consumer standpoint, I mean, obviously I'm a content marketer, but when I'm consuming content, I kind of expect the content to be things that I'm interested in.
And it's so funny what a sea change that's been. I mean, 5 years ago, our members were like, stop following me on the internet. You know, I hate cookies, all this stuff. You know, it was the exact opposite. Now we have actual members who are coming to us. I worked on a work group trying to rethink one of our newsletters. And the people on the work group who were members were saying, why aren't you tracking me and feeding up content that I'm interested in based on my clicks?
Right. And it even takes, you know, fast shifts from a resourcing and from a technology standpoint to be able to accommodate that. So when we talk about creative approaches, you all are obviously very creative people. That's why, you know, you won this amazing award. What are you most proud of in terms of creativity, and what has been most effective in marketing to the millennial audience for you?
I guess I would say the work that I'm most proud of so far, I guess, so since I started here at the AAP, again, I was in charge of marketing our live courses. And in the last fiscal year, the work that I did was it increased our course registrations by 30%.
Awesome.
Like a huge jump. So I guess like the creative aspect that I did, I added a lot more email marketing to what was previously done. They were a little heavy on the print, which is fine. You know, people still like to receive brochures and postcards and things, but I really amped up the email side of it and the social side of it as well. And I feel like that really made a difference in the registration. So that's what I'm most proud of so far.
Great. Anyone else have anything to add?
Matt, go for it. You've been talking about
Matt's sleeping. He's a three-week-old baby. He's like, I'm using this as my
so tired.
It's hard to pick one thing for me, and that, like, it's not because I've done so much. I think it's a product of being on a team, and maybe this comes with working with, you know, a lot of the science writers here are former scientists, and there's just this really, I think, healthy and exciting appetite for experimentation and trying new things. Like, personally, the thing I'm most proud of is for one of our videos, I got into a kiddie pool full of box wine, which was just, like, something I didn't think I'd ever get to do professionally.
Can you explain the background behind that story quickly?
So this was, it was inspired by a story where a basketball player, Mari Stoudemire, had sent out this picture on social media that he did this thing at a high-end spa in New York where he'd sit in a wine bath. The thinking was it's this vino therapy where there's antioxidants in the wine and it's good for your skin. And so I figured we're a chemistry magazine. We can talk to chemists and figure out if, you know, any of this holds water. And it turns out that the acidity of the wine, according to the ones people I talked to, would actually probably exfoliate your skin, but the barrier your skin forms to the antioxidant side of things, it probably doesn't help. But to communicate that message, we figured why not go to one of our producers' backyards and fill up his kiddie pool with cheap wine and mostly water. You know, that's sort of the spirit we've adopted with the video. Why not try it, right? We can. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but we can't say we didn't try.
Why not? You know, I'm kind of proud of my efforts to talk about what the magazine is doing to the rest of the association because, you know, we've been telling these stories for, you know, 50 years or so. And then we can use that kind of creative backlog to say, you know, if we just keep coming back to the idea of helping members be better at their work and helping them tell their stories, I think that gets to the core of what an association does best. And so when that message comes from the editorial side, it rings true and it's a real strength of what we do as communicators. So being able to communicate what creativity does for an association is almost just as key as executing it.
Awesome. And for all of you, what's on your wish list?
So something that I had mentioned in the article before was that on my wish list for the future, it was data mining software. And we are working on obtaining it soon because, like, a big part of my job is, you know, targeting and figuring out who we're going to mail to next or email next. And I just feel like our current software doesn't break it down as much as I would like. So I just want something that's really going to, like, I guess, drill down, just make it easier for us to do some better targeting.
I'll take that, too. Send it over when you find it. Yeah, having tools that don't quite give you what you want are, I mean, to me, that's the biggest catalyst for change around here. We have so many, like, enterprise-level tools because we have 1.3 million members. And, you know, when that doesn't live up to their expectations, when our, you know, one of our tools is not doing as good a job as Facebook is, and they're like, well, Facebook is free. Why can't you just use that? It's a real struggle with these huge amounts of data and these huge processes that need to be managed by these huge companies. You know, I guess my wish would just be like that more of the kind of IT departments and marketing departments and that they come to us as communicators with that question, what's on your wish list? I would love if people asked us for, like, what do you actually need from this product before we purchase it? And how can these outside partners and vendors serve not only the communicators, but our members in a better way?
Yeah, those are both really, really good answers. I think related to that, I was actually just looking at, like, analytics before this phone call. And I think I did one thing I was supposed to, then like 15 things that I wasn't. Not saying that that was a waste of time. Like, I just don't know. I thought these were interesting numbers. So you followed where they went. Getting back to, like, the wish list, I think one of the things I struggle with is figuring out what of the data available to me is the most valuable, right? Or how do you, which of, there's just so much out there. Like, what do you choose to focus on? What does that tell you about, you know, how your story is connecting with which readers? That's ranging, but I think the big, my wish would be to like know which data is most valuable and if you're out in the meantime.
I think that's the entire marketing world's wish. As increasing, you know, amounts of data becomes available to us, how do we best utilize it to make educated decisions? And from a content creation standpoint, you know, I think that's going to be a huge question that people continue to try to answer day in and day out. So if you had one bit of advice for an association that wants to start reaching young prospects but doesn't know where to begin, what would your piece of advice be?
Stop using the word millennial.
I agree with that. And I do feel like they kind of lump us all into one big pot where, like, we want different things. Like, I'm a millennial, but I'm, like, an older millennial. My brother is still a millennial, but he's 4 years younger than myself. And I just feel like we would want completely different things when it comes to, you know, communications and things like that.
Totally. Well, and the other thing about the, I'm also an older millennial. My brother is younger than me. My brother, just from a real estate perspective, my brother has already bought a house, sold a house, and bought his second house.
Oh,
and
wow.
I, as the older person, just bought my first house after he had already sold his first house. So, you know, just because there are certain, people are a certain age doesn't mean they're at the same spot. And I think that also goes for our membership. We have a real struggle with real estate being kind of a second career. So we have a lot of realtor rookies, you know, new people on the block who are like 50 years old. So they need the same information that a millennial coming out of college getting into real estate does. And so lumping people into that group isn't necessarily the end-all be-all. And another thing I would say is in terms of hiring young people, just hiring a millennial isn't going to solve these challenges. I mean, you have to hire people who can think critically and honestly about the challenges ahead, while also at the same time holding the mission of the organization alongside those needs of members at the same time. So, you know, hiring carefully and not just hiring people because we're young is a piece of advice I would give to associations as well.
And what about your advice for, I'm not even going to say the M word. How about that? For an M word or even younger than the M word, someone starting a new job at an association, what would you say your favorite things about working at an association are?
You know, I think the biggest thing, especially with associations, they're just mission focused. I feel like our generation wants to be tied to something or feel like they're doing something meaningful. So working for an organization that is mission focused, you know, really, I think would resonate with them.
Yeah. The American Chemical Society, and I'd imagine a lot of others too, they have physical meetings, right? They have conferences, at least two a year that are national meetings that are becoming increasingly international. And I think that's just been something I really enjoyed because it's, you physically feel part of something bigger, right? You get to meet people from all over the world and talk to them in person and feel connected to the community that you're writing for and helping, you know, foster by being part of an association. And
if there's a common theme employers can take away from our guests today, it's this. Give smart young marketers room to experiment, and they'll take pride and ownership in their work. If there's a common theme for content creation, it's that personalization matters now more than ever. That personalization can take many forms. In the broadest sense, it's authenticity that you put into every blog post, video, or magazine article you create. Younger readers have grown up surrounded by advertising and marketing messages. They can easily tell the difference between something that sells and something that says, "Here's why this matters to you." But personalization is really about reaching individuals. It's about looking at what content your members and prospective members are responding to and tailoring what they receive in return. That might take the form of a user preference center for your e-newsletters. Users check boxes about what topics matter most to them, and you serve up content that matches. Tools are getting far more sophisticated than that, too. For example, filters on content hubs let users control their own reading experience. In turn, the best hubs see what users are picking so they can offer an even better visit the next time. We're not all there yet, but that's where we're headed. And if we get there, people from every generation will benefit. Let's close today's episode with my favorite exercise, I Like, I Wish. I like that associations recognize the value millennials bring to the workforce and member base. It shows up in ever-expanding content efforts. I wish more associations would look at us as more than a set of trends and preferences, though. Ultimately, those trends and preferences may be different from those of baby boomers or Gen X, but one thing remains the same. We don't all fit the same mold. I also wish more people would start looking beyond the M word and onto the next generation. They're coming, and they're true digital natives. That's all we have for you today. Join us next time when we'll explore advocacy. How do you talk to members about policy priorities in a way that spurs action?